Chapter 46 Coming Back from the Dead. From them I learned that Hugh Blackwell, ignoring advice from his cadre of lawyers, had already pleaded guilty to 4 counts of first-degree murder for Heinz Hockman, Joey Kay, Monica Martindale, and her sister Beverly, as well as his foiled attempt on my life. Media coverage was widespread and so clamorous that it wouldn't wait until I got out. Doctors, nurses, maintenance personnel, and others were all guilty of feeding scoops to the tabloids. Pirated photos were being smuggled out, no matter how hard they tried to prevent it. Owing to these breaches and bowing to outside political pressures, the doctors decided to permit a brief photo opportunity featuring me in my hospital gown and wearing cool-looking sunglasses. Gathered at my bedside were the mayor of New York, the New York City police commissioner, and Dean Simmons. The mayor is shown presenting me with the city's highest accolade, the Civilian Commendation Award. In the photo that appeared in all the papers, Dean Simmons's right hand can be seen visibly healed from its dog bite. However, based on the forced smile on his face, in which he looks as though he has a mouthful of sour grapes and has just bitten into one, it appeared to me that he will likely continue to invite canine aggression. I received, in addition to my medal, the key to the city, which included several free dinners. I used one my first night out, New Year's Eve, to take Lonnie Kim to an elegant underground restaurant, courtside at Rockefeller Center Ice Rink. The maitre d' ushered us to our table behind a plate glass window, overlooking the rink. Skaters circulated in front of us like fish in an aquarium. The tinted coating on the windows allowed us to see out but made it difficult for the skaters to see in. Since I was still wearing sunglasses, Lonnie Kim had requested extra candles for our table. Their added glow, however, defeated some of the functionality of the one-way glass and permitted those skating by to peer in at her. Many were slowing down to look, some even gawking. Who could blame them? Owing to my still-healing skin grafts, I was wearing loose cotton clothing, a linen sports jacket, cream-colored khakis, and, very daringly, white socks with sandals. Lonnie Kim, on the other hand, wore a blue satin dress, tight as a skin graft itself. She looked gorgeous, especially to someone like myself just coming back from the dead. The wine steward appeared and began filling our glasses with bubbly. Reacting without thinking, I shouted and knocked his arm away, spilling champagne onto the tablecloth and drawing attention from other tables. Without missing a beat, the waiter reacted as if the spill were all his fault and inquired if I would prefer something else instead. A soft drink, he suggested. Speaking for both of us, Lonnie Kim quickly answered that just water would be fine. He bowed and backed away. Another waiter appeared with a water pitcher and filled our glasses. As soon as he was gone, I apologized. Sorry about that. She gave me a sympathetic smile. She had been giving me a lot of those lately, she said. It's all right. No need to apologize. Her solicitude was almost getting on my nerves. I didn't like being considered damaged goods. She stretched her hand across the table to me, but I didn't reach out for it. Parker, is this too much too soon? Do you want us to go? I shook my head, unable to answer. There was a lump in my throat I couldn't make go away. Not only that, but my lower eyelids were brimming with tears, making the skaters going by all appear as if they were up to their waist in water. I was glad I had these sunglasses to hide behind. I managed to get through the rest of the courses. The revelers in the room were starting to crank up as the midnight hour was rapidly approaching. However, with my mood still in the dumps, I didn't feel much like celebrating. Clearly, I had chosen poorly in picking this restaurant. I kept thinking about Audrey Hopkins. I kept picturing her out on the ice, going round and round in the supportive arms of the professional skater and beaming her innocent smile at me. It almost felt as if I could actually see her out there. Ridiculous, I knew, since she was presently ensconced at the Columbia Presbyterian Hospital. But I couldn't make the image go away. I heard the clasp of Lonnie Kim's evening purse. In the candlelight reflection off the window pane, I noticed her reach out and place something on the tablecloth between us. I turned to see what it was. It was the little periwinkle seashell I had given her from off the beach in Honolulu during our first week together. "Still got it, I see," I said. She said, "Would you like it back?" I said, "What? No. Why would I want it back?" "Parker, may I ask you a question?" "Of course," she said. "Were you in love with Monica Martindale?" I said, Was I in love with her?" "I don't think so."
"You don't think so?"
"I don't think so," I explained. "I had a high school teacher once who called me a chivalric romantic. She said, "Goodness, what is that?" I said, "A wannabe knight in shining armor." She said, "But you are. You are a knight. You are a knight." If I were, I wouldn't have been so influenced by the fact that the damsel in distress was good-looking. True knights are not supposed to be swayed by that sort of thing. As Zeke put it, we were both hormonally duped. We were interrupted then as our frozen desserts arrived. Before taking her first spoonful, Lonnie Kim asked, "Don't I hormonally dupe you anymore?" "Yes, always, continually." "Of course you do." I put the seashell in my clean silver spoon and presented it back to her. I said, "Here, put this back into safekeeping." The brilliance of her smile eclipsed all the candlelight in the room and melted the frozen sorbet at all nearby tables. Changing the subject, I said, "I had a final visitor last night in the hospital.